Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, welcome to Horse Hour. I'm Amy Frost. My guest today is the lovely Alex Bragg. He's a 4-star eventer and someone I've wanted to talk to for ages because he just makes eventing look so much fun. So I really hope you enjoy today's episode where we hear all about Alex and his eventing journey. This is Horse Hour. Welcome to the Horse Hour podcast. I'm really excited today because I have a guest that I feel a bit like a stalker. I've wanted him on the podcast for ages. His name's Alex Bragg. How are you?
Yeah, I'm really well, thank you.
I'm good, thanks. I have wanted you on the podcast for ages because I've seen you at events competing. We have a little bit in common because you used to be a rugby player and my brother was a professional rugby player.
Okay.
And I see your family and you always look so happy at every event. You know, when you see people and think, oh, I really want to be friends with them.
Well, we are trying to enjoy it. I don't see the reason why you'd do it if you didn't. So, fingers crossed, the success will continue and then the fun will continue.
Well, take me back to the beginning then, because a few years ago you were a rugby player and then I believe your wife Simone, you know, you were blessed with some children. So you ended up taking on the ride. But at that point, what made you change from a rugby career to an eventing career?
Well, there are a lot of things that were changing at the time. You know, rugby's quite a physical game. There's not a great deal. Well, there wasn't a great deal of money kind of back kind of 15, 20 years ago.
There still isn't now, to be honest.
Not for the punishment you have to take. Yeah. And we'd got married, we'd bought a house, Simone fell pregnant, and actually responsibilities kind of kick in. Mm. So I kind of thought then that maybe I should take a backward step a little bit from the rugby. Mm. And then I missed that kind of competitiveness. And then when Simone fell pregnant and I had the opportunity to ride her horse, that kind of introduced something competitive back into my life. And mm-hmm. And it kind of just grew from there and it took over, I suppose.
So were you riding while you were playing rugby or is that something that Simone introduced you to?
I rode when I was younger. I did all sorts on ponies. I did Prince Philip Games. Then I did show jumping. And then when I was 16, I stopped riding, just had enough. And I also started training as a farrier. And then it was something to do. The lads that I used to play rugby with at school just got me back playing again. And then I got kind of spotted, I suppose, talent spotted, and then taken on at the academy at Bristol. And then that's where it went. So when Simone introduced me back into the horse, I was a little bit rusty and my body shape probably wasn't quite right for a horse rider because I'd been training a lot for rugby, very broad shoulders and big old neck. I think I looked like a gorilla riding on a horse, really. my dressage wasn't particularly great. But then, yeah, over the years, refined everything back into riding and that's how it began and here we are now.
Wow. So you've actually changed your body shape again back to a more, I guess, leaner kind of style?
Yeah. Well, you know, when you're playing rugby, you're trying to put on mass, so you're eating a lot of food and doing a lot of heavy weights. When I came back to riding, I suppose I just dropped all the heavy weights and started kind of eating a bit more normally. Mm. And then slowly your body just kind of changes back again, I suppose, really. Mm. I guess it's I guess I'm probably more at my natural kind of body shape now, whereas when I was playing rugby, it was a kind of produced extra kind of mass and muscle. And I mean, I was still small compared to some of the guys now. They're huge. But
insane, aren't they?
Well, yeah. I think you needed to be fit and strong just to make sure that you stayed in one piece at the end of the game more than anything. But now I'm obviously, you know, dedicated to the riding and just keep my fitness more kind of in tune with that. So you don't want to be heavy because you're doing endurance when you're going cross country. So you want them to be able to go fast and you don't want them to tire out. So if you're carrying an extra stone or 2 stone that's unnecessary, then that's going to impede you doing so well. So you got to stay race weight, which is what I say.
That's a good idea. I could never watch my brother playing rugby because I was always worried that something would happen. And I heard that Simone has the same about you eventing. She's a bit nervous for you.
Yeah, the cross country particularly. So I don't think she barely walks the courses actually because she would worry about certain fences too much. But I guess it's nice for me because it tells me that she still cares for me, so that's great after so many years being married. But I think it is my children now are riding and competing, and it is definitely harder being on the floor and waiting for them to come round. I do kind of sympathize with her a little bit.
You're out of control, aren't you? You can only do so much training and advice and give them what they need. You give them the tools and then you just sit there with your fingers crossed praying that they've taken it all in and that they're going to be okay.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think when you're in the driving seat, you're living the moment, so you don't have time to actually feel nervous when you're going, whereas they just literally just have to wait for you. And I, like every rider, I suppose, I've had my moments where I have fallen, and every fall is pretty kind of theatrical. So it must be awful to watch. And then you're running to try and find the horse or me, and you're not sure what you're gonna get. But luckily I've been okay through my career, and it's all right. And she is getting better, I think. I think they just ply her full of wine and then that helps.
But it's nice for her. You know, us women, we have to have children. And when we have horses, we kind of think, I can't speak for Simone, but I can just think for myself, is that, I don't have 9 months off to stop riding. And you feel like, although you really want children, you're giving up your passion. So what's so lovely is that she can live her passion through you.
Yeah, definitely. It's really a family kind of thing, which is great. And I think that probably does come across really always. As if I can have the children there, I think it helps me relax. I feel more settled and I seem to do better anyway. But yeah, it is lovely. And I think she thoroughly enjoys it. And it is a very, very social sport anyway. There's a huge community in the eventing world, but our owners in particular and our support crew are fantastic. So they're all great friends, and they really, really do enjoy the day as well as obviously hopefully the success that you might get at the end of it.
Well, that really comes across every event we've seen you at. You look like you're just having an absolute ball and enjoying every moment. And what's interesting is that's not necessarily winning. It's knowing, from what I get from you, just from an outsider, is your horse is progressing. Each horse progresses each time. And you can see that you're really proud of that.
Yeah, well, we spend a lot of time with our horses at home, working with them. And I think you do feel if the horse is really trying, then you can always have patience with it. You feel frustrated when you feel that the horse just has let you down, that it just couldn't be bothered. But as long as they're really trying, and that's I put huge emphasis on that at home with the way that we work the horses to make sure they're enjoying it. And they're always thinking forward and, you know, they're always wanting to go to the next show because I think that's really important. There's no point having the best 6-year-old horse in the world, but by the time it's 10 and it's going to go 3 and 4 star, it just can't be bothered anymore. Mm. You know, you want it to really still be enthusiastic then. So, and I think the horses feel that from you. I genuinely do. I mean, some people, they don't think a horse's performance really relates to whether you have a relationship or not. It's just the fact that you're the rider, you're in charge, and the horse does the job. But I actually think that when you're in those sticky situations, which you do get, unfortunately, if the horse really wants to do it for you, it will just pull through. and help you out. And I just like them to be, I'm quite a committed person, and I've had some falls sometimes from being overcommitted. But if the horse is as committed as you, then I think you're on a winner, and you're going to be successful. And yeah, that's what I look for in my horses and want to produce in them. And that's what I enjoy when they give me. So.
Well, it's perfect because it is a partnership. And, I know horses, one of mine, for example, is pretty rubbish with me. But with another rider, they've got an amazing partnership. And I adore him and love him. And, you know, it's all about the feeling and the relationship. But still, I'm not good enough. But with her, they just have this magical, it's like they're one with each other. Which I just absolutely adore watching. So your team around you then, you've got grooms, owners, Simone does a lot of the riding, doesn't she? How important are they that you put together your A team?
Yeah, really important. I think it's vital when you are at an event under pressure that you've actually got your team relieving that pressure from you by making sure the horses are ready. Everything else is done and all you have to focus on is the job that you at hand, really, which is either, you know, jumping that show jump track or going through your dressage or cross country.
So we quite often look, you know, we see you at the big competitions like Burley, but we don't see the behind the scenes hard work that it takes to build up to that point. And so when was it that, what year was it that you gave up the rugby and moved on to eventing?
Oh, God, so this is a long time ago now, show my age. It would have been 2003, maybe I gave up my rugby, and then 2004. I rode my first event horse.
Wow. So, yeah. So we're talking about 14 years.
Yeah, 13, 14 years ago, yeah.
Which ultimately, it sounds like a long time, but some people are riding for longer than that and they never make it to that level. So what was it that was different, do you think, that you did differently to be able to achieve that?
I think it's an individual thing a little bit. I think if you're driven, then that will always help you become successful. And I think I am particularly driven, so that helps. I suppose I did my first 3-star after about 5 years in the sport, and I was then that horse never went higher than 3-star, and then I produced some more horses up to that level. And it takes time to produce those horses, and all these horses that I've got now are ones that have come up since they were 4 and 5 year olds. So you can put that time scale into practice. Actually, you probably couldn't have done it any faster than we did. But I don't know, really. I think you just got to try and find some horses and just stick at it, get some good training, and just really want it. Watch the other riders, listen to the other riders, and pick the best bits, pick what works for you, and make it happen, really. But yeah, I don't know. I'm driven to win, which and I think that is an important side of it. There are people out there that just enjoy taking part. And don't get me wrong, I do get a lot of satisfaction and reward from the horses doing well, but I do it to eventually, ultimately win. And I would like to not just be at Burley and Bampton participating, but I'd like to be there hopefully holding up the trophy one day soon. Fingers crossed.
I have this vision. It's going to happen quite soon, but I don't want to jinx you. So
No. Well,
I do. I really like watching the riders to learn from their mistakes as well, because let's be honest, it's easier to learn from somebody else falling off and hurting themselves than it is from when you do it.
Definitely, yeah. But I think it's very hard when you experience that. I mean, when you're living the moment in that cross country course, everything happens so fast. So you could watch a playback of somebody's video clip of them making a mistake at a corner and the horse running out, or you know, getting the stride pattern wrong and it not working for them. But actually, until you've lived it, I don't think you can really tell what you're going to do. So you kind of need to learn how to adjust when things are not perfect. More so when things always go perfect, everyone looks like a professional. But the things you need to learn is when things don't quite happen perfectly and how you can still get to the other side of the fence. And I think you've got to live it in the moment to do that a little bit. It is only experience, unfortunately.
Do you at that time when, you know, everyone's running on the cross country course and I don't know, you're about to run, maybe you're about an hour away. Do you watch everyone else's runs just to see how the course is going?
I'm a bit selective. I will watch certain fences, which I just want to check on how the stride pattern is with maybe the undulations of the ground and stuff like that, or the quality of the ground, whether it's deep or fast going. Probably pick certain riders with certain horses which are more like mine to watch. But after that, no, I would just be going through the course in my head and focusing on my round, because you don't want to be over-influenced by somebody else, because really, ultimately, you've got there with your horse and you know your horse best, so you should know how to hopefully produce the best from him yourself. So yeah, not be too influenced by other people.
That's really interesting, because we've got a lot of new young riders coming through, which is so exciting. I spoke to a lovely girl called Ivy Freeman Atwood the other day, who's 18, and yep. She's running 2-star now, and she's hoping to get up to 3-star. She said she's a bit nervous about it, because when you make that next jump up to the next level, that's when it gets nerve-wracking. So what would you say to them, for somebody that wanted to make that next step up to 3-star, the kind of things that they need to be thinking about?
I'd say just check that you are dead confident at the level that you're currently at. So if you are at 2-star level already, you know, as long as you're running around those tracks, the horse feels really confident and you feel that you're consistent. If you're consistently putting in the same performances, then you're ready for a new challenge. If you feel that it's a bit hit and miss, one time you have a good run, then you have a really bad run and then a good run, I'd say it's a little bit dangerous ground to then make the jump, because if you're on a bit of a bad run day, then it could be catastrophic. So make sure, look for consistency in the way that you're riding and the way the horse is going, and then you're ready for that new challenge, and that's a time to really try and ask a more experienced rider for help when walking the course. Again, you have to bear in mind how your horse goes. If you're on a little horse and he's riding a big horse, you know, your stride pattern is going to be different to his. But, you know, do take that. When I first went to Burley, I asked Andrew Nicholson if I could walk the course with him, and he kindly took me around the course. And I think it was really, really helpful. And riders are out there to help. People do want to help, because everyone's been in that position themselves. So, you know, if somebody was on the course and came up to me and approached me to ask about a fence, I'd be more than happy to help them.
You're going to have a queue now, though, now that you said that.
Well, I'd like, you know, it's nice to give something back, because the sport's given us so much. So, I'd love to do that. You know, if I'm a rider rep anywhere, then I really try and interact with the riders and make them feel that they can approach you, because although you are there to be approached, sometimes people are a bit scared and nervous. So, yeah, I'd advise them not to be too nervous. Go and approach people, ask people. And when you do leave that start box, don't doubt yourself, you know, be in a position where you're going to attack it and feel that you're going to own it, really, and get around it and win. You got to, and go out to win, go out to win all the time. then you'll ride confidently. That's my theory anyway.
Oh, I love it. So what kind of things do you do at home? Can you tell us a bit about your horses? Have you bred any?
No, I'm not really into the breeding side of it. You have to have a lot of patience for that, and a huge setup, really. Because you need a lot of turnout for the mares and the foals and things. And I find that actually you probably stand a better chance of getting a good horse if you see it as a 3, 4, or 5-year-old. A little bit like brothers and sisters. You know, there could be 4 brothers stood in front of you, and one is going to be more talented at one thing than another, and as you go along the line. So, you know, you could breed 4 horses and one of them would be great at cross country and the 3 others not so much, you know. So you might as well save your time and money and just go and buy the one which is going to be good at what you want it to be. That's my view on it. I know it's a lovely story when you're kind of like an owner breeder and stuff like that, but you really need to have the time to devote into that, whereas at the moment I'm kind of, you know, I need the horses to be active, and that doesn't start really until they're 5 years old. So it's best for me to have a yard full of those and up than it is to have, you know, yearlings and stuff running around.
So do you take them on at 5, or do you take them on slightly younger?
It just varies, really, depending on when they're delivered with people or when we find them. So, you know, we've had some horses from 3, 4, 5, and recently this year we've had a sort of 6-year-old come in. But generally that kind of younger age where you can start the training from scratch and you can put the building blocks in place. Because I really think that that's important as well, that they learn what is expected of them right from the beginning. Mm. Because some horses, otherwise, they just don't always give you 100%. You just got to, you know, when I go cross-country schooling, I would ask the horse to travel to a fence and see the question and expect him to work it out for himself. Whereas if somebody has worked it out for them all along their career, and then you get it as a 7 or 8 year old, and then suddenly you're in a position where you need him to think and respond and react, and he's never done that before, but you as a rider expect him to be able to do that, that's when you could end up in trouble. So
yeah,
it's nice if you know the horse inside out and he knows what's expected of him from you and from himself, and then that makes the difference when you're out there on the course.
But how do you get a horse to think for himself? Because if I get my, I'm bearing in mind I'm not an eventer, I'm a, you know, 4 feet on the ground, we plod around kind of dressage kind of girl, you know, how do you get your horse to think for himself? Because mine comes from my confidence that I give him, and I don't know, and I hear this question a lot, is how do you get your horse to actually make their own decision?
So obviously you want to have influence as a rider. And it, I think if anyone's had a riding lesson, it's always harder to do less than it is to do more when you're riding the horse. And I think what you do when you're training the horse and you're approaching your grid work exercises or your cross-country kind of combinations is you put the horse in the right pace, in the right position, and then you just have to allow it to learn where to put its feet. You don't want to be unbalanced in it, so you make sure your position is good. But you're really, you don't want to be pulling and over kicking and stuff like that, but let the horse actually find its way. And then when you're in a competition and you are applying your leg and your hand and making it a little bit, or giving the horse more help, you know, the horse can do the job a little bit better and a little bit quicker. But then if there is a situation where the horse stumbles or trips or you're left behind, then he has got that kind of tool in his box to, you know, the boss is not there. Hang on a minute. I know I can see the flags ahead of me. I'll sort the job out and carry you through. And I had that situation at Babington this year on Zagreb, where we didn't have the best stride going into a double of corners about two thirds of the way around the track. And supposed to be a big two strides over the second corner. And we got there on 2.5. And really, I just sat there and thought, don't interfere, let him figure it out. And he just kind of sucked his body together and just threw himself through the flags.
Oh,
you know?
Wow.
And that is because he wanted to do it, and he kind of knew however he could with his body. He just had to get between that white and red flag. So, and that's what you want to try and introduce in their training right from the start, just by cantering through a pair of wings. And you make sure that you're always giving them a channel to go down, I suppose. And then they look for that channel, and that will help you out in the future for sure.
This is amazing. I'm going to be...
Does that make
flags.
Sense?
That makes perfect.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
sense. I'm going to be putting flags up everywhere now, giving my horse a focus. So you're a teacher as well, aren't you? You're a coach. So have you got any protégés coming up that we should be excited about?
Well, I did have a lot of working pupils like a couple of years ago, and they're all doing well. A young lad, Steve Heal, actually beat me on the weekend. I was second to him in a novice class. So he's set up now on his own, and or he's just starting to set up on his own, and he's doing fantastic. Very proud of him to see him go on and do well. I do coach a little bit, but it's difficult now with time. This year has been very, very hard because we've been away a lot of international events abroad and things. So to dedicate time to coaching, it's not fair on your pupils if you're not around enough. So I've actually taken a backward step from that and just focused on my horses for the moment. But it is nice to see the kind of guys from the past doing really, really well. And they still ask for advice now, and it's nice. And I still go out and give them some grief in the warm-up and wish them well, but not too well.
And so what's your aim then, if you're focusing on your horses?
So now my two top horses are heading to Pau in France, which is the four-star over there at the end of October. So, you know, that's the main focus for them. And then, next year, I think I'd like to do the Event Rider Master Series a little bit more seriously. That's great at a three-star level competition, an amazing series that they've put together. Great for the spectators, great for the sponsors, great for the riders, great for eventing in a profile. I mean, it's just amazing, really. And then Babington. I'm hoping to get my two four-star horses to Babington and have a good crack at winning that, fingers crossed, in the spring.
Well, you have twice the chance then if you're putting in two horses. Good tactic, I like that.
Yeah, that's right. That's one less competitor to compete against because I've got two other slots. Yeah, I mean, it is an advantage, I think, having the two horses there, because you if you make a mistake on the first horse, at least you get a second chance. But it's great for the owners as well. It's a wonderful event.
It's a massive achievement to be able to have two horses there, because, you know, it's hard enough building one and training one to get to that level, let alone having two is remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the top guys, though, you know, there's at times they would have had, you know, three or four or even more, you know, and that's when you can kind of contest the Rolex Grand Slam with Kentucky, Badminton and Burley. I'm not in that position yet, but hopefully in a couple of years' time, these younger string of horses are coming through, and our string of horses is much stronger each year. You know, we kind of pass on the ones which are not so great, and then we get in some younger ones which we think have got the talent and keep pushing on through. So hopefully in a few more years you'll see us up there with a string of three and four star horses being able to compete at that. But two horses is great, and they're the first two horses that I started from scratch myself. I'm very, very, very proud of them, and they've come through the journey, and I think that echoes through, like I say, about this partnership thing and them really fighting for you. They are super cross-country horses, and they would go to the end of the world for me, and I believe in them, and I think, you know, that kind of replicates back to me, and they believe in me, so they would do anything.
That's really lovely, because as an owner, oh my goodness, I would love to be an owner and to give you a horse and say, there you go, Alex. Keep him, take him, do what you can with him. But I think some owners that I've seen sometimes, they get so far and then they kind of jump ship and they go somewhere else. And I think, oh, it's so hard for you to keep that relationship with them, where you have a good working owner relationship, where you get to keep the horses, they stay with you for as long as possible.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's where you just need to rely on your owners being loyal. I have a great set of owners with me now. You know, hopefully they'll all remain under, you know, there's some of the owners which I know I can really rely upon, and they're amazing. But that does happen, and it's happened to us. You know, horses have been sold and, you know, people have cashed in. But you just have to, when you do it professionally, you have to take that on the chin, really, and accept that is going to happen, and not let it get you too kind of demoralized about the sport, and just keep focusing on the horses you've got. And I think if you do well enough, then you've got to, almost you've got to give them no reason to move the horses. You know, if they're seeing the horses doing really, really well with you, and they're being successful, then why would they jump ship and go somewhere else? So I think, just sometimes don't make too many excuses and actually just knuckle down and work a bit harder. And hopefully, you know, you might get one of those horses come flying your way, and I'm sure those people wouldn't complain about that. So,
true.
You know, you've got to take it both ways. But I think you just have to build a really secure team around you. And I think if the owners do feel that you're doing as much as you can for them and you're realistic and honest, then hopefully that will kind of get them to be loyal and honest with you and stick with you. Fingers crossed, he says.
I guess it's patience as well, isn't it? I think sometimes our expectations of our horses are a little bit too much, and I think we need to just remember that it does take time for to build good foundations. To be truly successful takes more than 6 months.
Oh god, yeah way more. Like I say, going back to this partnership thing, it takes seasons to really build, and that's when you're going to get the best from the horses. And yeah, you know, I've had horses where people have brought them for me to sit on, and I've been realistic and said, look, let's see how we get on at this, and then we'll go from there. And they've taken the horse to another rider to try, and they said, yeah, I'll have it at Bamington in 2 years. Oh. And I'm thinking, it's never going to go to Bamington in 2 years. It might one day, but never. But the owners are driven by that, and they will take that to the other rider. And then you see the horse not doing so well, but then that's the owner's decision to have done that. And actually, I think long-term, that owner probably wouldn't have been the best owner for me anyway.
Yeah.
So I probably had a lucky escape. You know, so you've got to look at it. If you start off realistic and the owners are willing to be realistic with you, then I think that's a long-term kind of relationship that you can build, rather than just kind of promise them the world now and always kind of failing to kind of reach that target that you've set yourself. So you don't need to put any more pressure on yourself than the sport already does.
Exactly. You're in a position where you need to be able to get on and do your job, and you need to look after the owners and make sure that everyone's happy. But ultimately, if you're spending more time trying to please everybody else, you're not going to be doing what's right for the horse or yourself.
Yeah, definitely. You know, you got to take everybody's interests kind of into play. So if an owner has a particular thing, you know, you try and work with them. But yeah, ultimately, you know, they have to have trust in you in how you're going to produce this horse to make sure that it gets to the top end of the sport. You know, you don't, it's lovely to win at pre-novice and novice level, but no one will remember you for it, you know, and there's no point having the best novice horse in the world that then never goes any further. You know, people recognize you at the big events, and you need to just try and educate the owner sometimes into remembering that. And thinking, you know, this horse, it needs to have its, you need to save its confidence, you need to save its legs, you know, so just kind of look after this, train it, produce it properly, and then in a couple of years' time, you'll be at the kind of Blenheims, Brahmams, and hopefully then Bamington and Burleys, really. So
amazing.
I think communication, maybe, that's probably the best word.
Like
to describe
that. So I would like to go and buy a horse, and I would like to bring him to you, be
your
owner.
Good.
What?
I like you.
Yeah. What kind of? Well, how much would you expect me to spend on a horse? I mean, let's say I'm looking at a youngster, because I don't have hundreds of thousands of pounds to buy a, you know, super experienced one. I would like you to train him from the beginning. So we're looking at 4 years old. Are you looking at £2,000 horses, or are you looking at kind of £15,000 horses?
God, I mean, we've got horses on the yard which were given to us for free. We've got Redpath Ransom was, you know, nearly heading down the road of actually being put down before he came to us. So, you know, that was a better path for him to become a four-star eventer than the other. Yeah, I mean, a horse, Bomahon Blue Mist, who's 6 years old now, we bought with the owners a three-year-old for just a few thousand pounds over in Ireland. Yet we've got some horses here where the owners, you know, have kind of paid, you know, £20,000 to £30,000 for the horse, which has been five or six and done a couple of events. So whatever your budget is, there is a way of finding a nice horse. It just depends at what experience that horse has already had and how quickly you want to get going. You know, if you want to go and buy yourself a 3 or 4 year old, then you're going to need to be patient for 12 months, you know, whereas if you can go and get yourself a 5 year old, then you can get cracking and get out to some shows quite quickly. But that is going to cost you a little bit more money than starting. So depending on what you've got, And depending on how quickly you want to go, there's always a way of finding you a really nice horse.
I guess what I want to show is that it's achievable and that we don't all have to have, you know, all be millionaires to be able to support riders like yourself. Like, okay, I'm being really honest here. I could never be an eventer. I couldn't. I'm not good enough. I'm not brave enough. It scares the life out of me. I feel more connection with Simone, you know, stood on the sideline worrying than I do riding. But I'd love to be involved in that environment. And I know many of my friends that, you know, they love show jumping, but would love to be involved in eventing because they like the thrill of it. So what I'm trying to show, I guess, is that we can all play a part in the future of the industry and in the future of each individual discipline without needing to be millionaires.
No, definitely. I mean, and that's where sometimes syndicates can be a great thing, you know, where, you know, you can either a few friends or whatever could get together and share the training costs. And actually then if you think, well, do you know what, I could afford to put in £3,000 to buy a horse, and there's four of you, suddenly you've got £12,000 to buy yourself a nice young horse. And then your monthly fees are kind of a quarter. So, you know, it's all becomes affordable, really. Mm-hmm. And also we've got a great fund syndicate in place here where it's called the Team Bragg Syndicate. And the guys, actually, they pay £100 registration, £100 a month during the event season. And that gives them that gives them all the ownership benefits, access to all of our shows at Team Bragg. And they have a horse that we own ourselves to follow and support. But I think if our team, I'm sure other teams might be similar, I don't know, but our team, you know, whenever we go to an event, a lot of the owners will turn up, even if their horses are not running, to just support us and support the other owners. They become quite friendly with one another. So, actually, there are lots of different methods of getting involved. And if anyone was out there that did want to get involved and they wanted to talk about it and find out their options, the best thing is to just ring up and speak to a rider. Obviously, pick me first, I think. but if I die, don't work for you. You know, speak to the riders, and you know, they can maybe just enlighten people on how they could do it a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Actually, give them a realistic cost of what they think it might be, and same as with everything, really. If you have a budget, you could say, well, actually, look, this is what I wanted to do. This is what I'd like from the sport, and this is what I've got, you know, every year to spend on it. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, there might be a syndicate option available there. It's because it is so social, it's actually quite nice for people as well, because you can come and be introduced to new people as well as maybe coming in with a few friends. And before you know it, you've suddenly gone away and actually you're enjoying several days out each year rather than just 10 events with your one horse, you know. Mm. So it can be great. You just need to ring up and find out what's available, really.
And that's what's lovely, is that riders like yourself are approachable. And I think sometimes we have this fear of not, you know, you're so good, not being able, not wanting to bother you. That's the truth. We don't want to bother you. But it would be lovely to be able to be part of your journey and be involved in those events.
Yeah, definitely. And it's really exciting for us as well. You know, when I came over the finish line at Bamington, I mean, there were heaps of people up there supporting us. This local event for us, but you know, all of our owners of all of the horses, we were there with just one horse with one set of owners, but all of the owners were there, and the guys were crying and hugging. You know, I think they'd nearly bought all the Prosecco of the bar and like drunk it dry. I mean, it was absolutely mental. So much fun. And for me, coming over that finish line and seeing that, it's just so rewarding. I think I had every emotion under the sun going through me. I was proud. I was ready to cry. It's all going on. And that is what you get from people being around, that huge team spirit thing. So, I mean, to be involved is great for them, but it's also immensely satisfying for me when I deliver and yeah, just make them smile. It's really quite nice.
Oh, it's lovely. And your sponsors play a huge part as well. And I think, you know, for a lot of new equestrian businesses, I'm seeing a lot that are popping up all over the place. They would love to have the opportunity to sponsor you. And I guess that's just phoning you up and asking you, you know, if sponsorship's available, because I'm guessing your sponsors are a massive support for you.
Yeah, definitely. You know, we have great support from Gatehouse Hats, Mark Todd Collection, Devico. There's a competition venue, Pontyspool, which just ran their event on the weekend, which supports us. You know, we've like lots and lots of people, which really, without them, I think we just couldn't really afford to run at the level that we do. Mm. You know, we have people supplying us with show jumps to help train, so we've got better facilities, we've got people delivering good forage for the horses. I mean, all of that type of stuff really just helps you to keep running at such a high level, and you just couldn't do it without it, you know. It'd be nice. I think our lorry is actually coming to the end of its day soon, so we might be out there begging and for a new one of those off of somebody soon. But but yeah, you know, sponsors, owners, the guys that work behind the scene, I'm the one that gets to ride the horses and really live in the limelight. But all of those people do such an amazing job to help us stay on the road and stay winning, which is what we want to do.
Well, ultimately, you've got the responsibility of all those people as well. They're staff, so you've got to pay them.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a huge cost nowadays. If you want good staff, you've got to pay well. And to be fair, they're probably worth it. So, yeah, it is important to make sure that you can make money out of the sport to keep that going. There isn't a lot of money in it. You do it for the passion. I don't think we earn probably as much as the grooms earn from the game, really. So it's important that we win some prize money. But but yeah, it is a business as well as a sport. So you've got to make sure that all of that side of it runs really well also.
Mm. And what was the most successful event you've had this year?
Oh, the most successful event, I would probably say, was over in Aachen. I went over there with the Nations Cup team, although I was an individual, was the highest placed Brit over there, and finished eighth in, I mean, Aachen is huge.
It's just amazing.
Thousands and thousands of people there. And I also had the privilege of taking a second horse for the invitation class on the Saturday evening. And the main arena under the floodlights was rammed with 40 or 50,000 people. And we won that class, which was just, oh, I mean, it was, oh God, it was epic. You know, I was gantering around the arena, punching the air and getting the crowd to just, they were screaming, the energy coming in. So I just think, you know, as well as being successful, it was just probably the most enjoyable moment ever in my horse career so far. So Aachen was very, very special for me.
I've seen a recent, a gorgeous competition. I wish it included eventing. It's in New York, and it's the New York Central Park Horse Show. And I just think that would be phenomenal to be able to compete there.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I think they're springing up kind of competition venues all over the place now, which is fab. And to be something so central with so many people around, it is so accessible for people to come along and support. And I think it is having those venues with people there is what creates the atmosphere, and it's the atmosphere that makes the event so special. So I think we've got to remember that and not put ourselves on a pedestal. And sometimes as the British people, we can be a bit stiff upper lip, and it's all a bit rah-rah, you know, it's all for this and that. But actually, you know, if you can kind of reach out to the masses, then it makes it amazing. You know, I think this is where this Event Rider Master Series has really taken off, because it's really brought everybody and involved every element of the sport and made it accessible to people. So it's super, really.
Well, it's pulling in the crowds, isn't it? So let's go back to your rugby days of when you're in an arena and you've got 60,000 people cheering you on. Ideally, that's what we'd like at every single show in the equestrian industry.
Yeah, definitely. And I think if you do that, that's going to bring more money into it, and actually the sport should keep improving. So, yeah, I think there's some people behind the scenes maybe that could maybe kind of take a look at that, and maybe push that a little bit more, maybe. So, but
well,
that's
Alex,
not my job.
No, I'll work on that. Don't you worry.
Good, go for it.
It's been such a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much. We can follow you on Twitter and Facebook. What's your handle?
Well, we are Team Bragg Eventing on Facebook, mm-hmm. and
so you're at Team Bragg.
There you go, at Team Bragg. So that's easy.
Yeah.
So it's nice to remember. So yeah, definitely follow us on that. Get involved, make some comments, make some support, and get to some shows and just start screaming, because I love it. So the more you scream, the more I'll punch the air. So,
oh, we great. Will. Thanks so much, Alex. Speak to you soon.
You're welcome. Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. What an incredible week we've had. It was Horse of the Year show, and you can catch up with everything that happened if you head to our website, horsehour.co.uk. It was a really exciting one this year, with top riders competing in show jumping. There was the scurry driving, even the Pony Club Mountain Games. You can see all videos and photos on our website, and as always, on Twitter and Facebook and our Instagram. I hope you've had a really good week with your horse. There's previous episodes of the Horse Hour podcast you can also catch up with. You can listen on iTunes or Acast, again on our website. And one that's been really popular this week is Kissing Spine. I released it a couple of weeks ago with B&W Equine Vets. If you're worried about your horse having kissing spine, then do have a listen, because the guys at B&W just explained what it is, the signs, the symptoms and the treatment. And another episode which was released last week is on wobblers. Have you heard of wobblers? I hadn't, I'll be honest, until one of our followers asked a few questions about it on Horse Hour on a Monday night. And she was just a bit concerned. She'd heard the word, didn't really know what it was, and was concerned that her horse might have it. So do check out that episode on wobblers and neck arthritis too. I also love to have your feedback. Anything that you'd like to listen to, anything that you'd really like us to research, then you can drop us a message on Twitter, Facebook or Instagram. Or you can email me, team@horsehour.co.uk. I hope you have a great week with your horse, and I'll speak to you soon.
You've been listening to Horse Hour. Join the community on Twitter, Mondays, 8 p.m. UK time, 3 p.m. Eastern, by using the hashtag Horse Hour. Follow Amy at AmyStevenson1 and subscribe to us on Acast, iTunes, Stitcher and Player FM.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.